Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, March 12, 2024. Exxon, Permian Vital to Growth, Sustainability, by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. ExxonMobil is banking on its Permian Basin assets to fuel corporate growth in the coming years. The multinational giant has targeted producing at least 1 million barrels per day from its Permian assets by 2027. In 2023, the company averaged 612,000 barrels a day and is forecasting a 10% average growth rate, according to Bart Cahier, the company's senior vice president, Upstream Unconventional. In Midland to address the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference, Cahier sat for an interview at the offices of ExxonMobil's subsidiary XTO Energy in Northwest Midland. In keeping with the purpose of his visit, Cahier said sustainability is as important to the company as its oil and natural gas output. We've put in place a 10-year map for water management that is compatible with our growth trajectory, he said. That 10-year map focuses first on recycling as much produced water as the company generates as possible, using 100% recycled or brackish water in its hydraulic fracturing operations. ExxonMobil is taking a closer look at technology that accelerates the evaporation of produced water, which Cahier said would reduce the amount of water that must be disposed of in disposal wells. We're also looking at other beneficial reuse opportunities, ways to effectively use treated produced water. To increase beneficial reuse, we must also work with regulators on pathways so water can be treated for human use. We're working on regulatory clarity, he said. Looking beyond water, Cahier said the company is looking at its operations method, implementing a cube development that lets it drill multiple horizontal wells in stacked intervals from a single surface location. This lets the company maximize its production while minimizing capital expenditures. He estimated the cube strategy offers 50% more value than other designs. Another strategy is scaling up facilities. ExxonMobil's Cowboy Terminal, a central delivery point located in Eddy County, New Mexico, that handles 1.2 billion cubic feet per day of natural gas, processing 600,000 barrels per day of oil. Another strategy is scaling up facilities. ExxonMobil's Cowboy Terminal, a central delivery point located in Eddy County, New Mexico, that handles 1.2 billion cubic feet per day of natural gas processing, 600,000 barrels per day of oil processing, and 1.2 million barrels of on-site oil storage. A new phase is being started to add 600 million cubic feet of natural gas processing and 200,000 barrels per day of oil processing capacity. Multiple technologies are utilized to detect methane emissions from the company's facilities, from stationary sensors to air flights, stratospheric balloons to satellites, he said. The company has eliminated all. I-27 Act passes the U.S. Senate, designates Ports to Plains Corridor as future Interstate 27, by Ben Schaefer, staff writer. The I-27 Numbering Act, which officially designates the Ports to Plains Corridor as the future Interstate 27, passed in the U.S. Senate. Although legislation was initially passed on the issue in 2023, the Senate confirmed changes made to the act in the House in December, and it was passed again late last week, according to the U.S. Congress website. The route will pass through Midland as a connection from Sterling City to La Mesa called I-27 West. The corridor between Sterling City and La Mesa will be I-27 East and La Mesa northbound through Lubbock to Amarillo, passing through Dumas to Raton, New Mexico as I-27 and the corridor north of Dumas as I-27 North. In August, James Beauchamp, president of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, stated the importance of the route passing through the area. Today, the Permian Basin accounts for over 40% of U.S. oil production, 24% of U.S. natural gas production, and is home to 30% of freight movement in Texas. The effort by Senator Cruz to ensure the Permian was included as a primary route will aid in the development of domestic energy production and be a tremendous driver of economic activity along the corridor, he stated. U.S. Representative August Pfluger, Texas 11, introduced identical legislation in Congress last year. Pfluger said at the time that the corridor will unlock transportation capabilities for the energy industry in the Permian Basin, as well as enhance Texas's key economic agencies, international trade, energy, and agricultural production. This is a big deal for this part of the United States, and specifically for Texas. When you think about energy security being national security, Interstate 27 is going to play a massive role in allowing the delivery of that energy, not just to our country, but also throughout the rest of the world. In addition, food security is national security, and Interstate 27 will play a massive role in allowing the delivery of food to our own country. According to a press release on Senator Ted Cruz's website, who introduced the legislation in Senate, the bill received unanimous consent and is now headed to President Biden's desk to be signed into law. MPD response to shooting in Northwest Midland by City of Midland submitted to MRT. The Midland Police Department responded to a shooting at the Meridian Apartments at the 4400 block of Holiday Hill Road in Northwest Midland Monday morning. The department reported that officers responded to the Meridian Apartments at around 5:55 a.m., where they witnessed a man, the victim, running to a nearby convenience store on Briarwood Avenue. The 32-year-old man was later transported to the hospital to be treated and released. The man declined to press charges. Police are still looking for two suspects traveling in a white pickup. The weapon used was allegedly a .380 semi-automatic pistol. During the investigation, police arrested an individual not involved in the shooting for a narcotics charge. Suspects are unidentified at this time. The investigation is ongoing. Vehicle rollover on Loop 250 linked to alcohol, excessive speed by City of Midland, submitted to MRT. A rollover crash in the 2400 block of a North Loop 250 service road sent five people to Midland Memorial Hospital on Friday evening. Midland police said that the crash occurred at 9:15 p.m. and reported that a 2001 GMC Yukon was traveling east on the Loop 250 South service road between Garfield Street and A Street. The driver of the Yukon failed to control speed, causing the Yukon to roll multiple times and ejecting several subjects from the vehicle, Midland Police released in a public statement on Saturday. MPD later reported that three of the occupants were listed in critical condition. The age range of the five occupants was 16 to 22 years old. MPD also reported speed and alcohol were factors in the rollover. This investigation remains ongoing. Vehicle evading police goes airborne, weekend crash linked to fentanyl by B. K. Richter, staff writer. A single vehicle accident resulted in one traffic fatality and another person in serious condition on Friday evening after a vehicle rollover along East Loop 338 and Yukon Road. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, the accident occurred at 9:53 p.m. when the driver of a 2007 Mercury Milan evaded police after refusing to comply with the traffic stop. The driver of the vehicle, 32-year-old Jawan Hedrice Dobbins Jr. of Mesa, Arizona, was reported as having a large quantity of fentanyl pills and evading law enforcement in Arizona. When the Milan was located in Odessa, a traffic stop was attempted by Odessa Police Department and the University of Texas Permian Basin Police Department. Police records indicate that the driver refused to stop and evaded police. Texas Department of Public Safety troopers responded and assisted the chase before eventually losing sight of the Milan. The Ector County Sheriff's Office resumed the pursuit of the vehicle. The pursuit ended when the Milan traveled north northbound in the southbound lanes of East Loop 338 near Yukon Road. The driver of the Milan steered it into the dirt median to avoid colliding with two other vehicles. At that point, officers reported that the driver lost control of the vehicle and drove into the median between the northbound and southbound lanes of East Loop 338 on the overpass. That is the moment when the Milan was reported as going airborne off the overpass and crashed at Yukon Road and East Loop 338, where it then proceeded to roll several times. Dobbins Jr. was ejected from the vehicle and later pronounced dead at the scene. The passenger of the vehicle reported as 31-year-old Thalia Sigala of Hobbs, New Mexico, was also ejected and transported to Medical Center Hospital with serious bodily injuries. This crash remains under investigation and no further information is being released at this time. This is Christy, and I'll be reading Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, March 12, 2024. Exxon, Permian Vital to Growth, Sustainability, by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. ExxonMobil is banking on its Permian Basin assets to fuel corporate growth in the coming years. The multinational giant has targeted producing at least 1 million barrels per day from its Permian assets by 2027. In 2023, the company averaged 612,000 barrels a day and is forecasting a 10% average growth rate, according to Bart Cahier, the company's senior vice president, Upstream Unconventional. In Midland to address the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference, Cahier sat for an interview at the offices of ExxonMobil's subsidiary, XTO Energy, in Northwest Midland. In keeping with the purpose of his visit, Cahier said sustainability is as important to the company as its oil and natural gas output. We've put in place a 10-year map for water management that is compatible with our growth trajectory, he said. That 10-year map focuses first on recycling as much produced water as the company generates as possible, using 100% recycled or brackish water in its hydraulic fracturing operations. ExxonMobil is taking a closer look at technology that accelerates the evaporation of produced water, which Cahier said would reduce the amount of water that must be disposed of in disposal wells. We're also looking at other beneficial reuse opportunities, ways to effectively use treated produced water. To increase beneficial reuse, we must also work with regulators on pathways so water can be treated for human use. We're working on regulatory clarity, he said. Looking beyond water, Cahier said the company is looking at its operations method, implementing a cube development that lets it drill multiple horizontal wells in stacked intervals from a single surface location. This lets the company maximize its production while minimizing capital expenditures. He estimated the cube strategy offers 50% more value than other designs. Another strategy is scaling up facilities. ExxonMobil's Cowboy Terminal, a central delivery point located in Eddy County, New Mexico, that handles 1.2 billion cubic feet per day of natural gas, processing 600,000 barrels per day of oil. Another strategy is scaling up facilities. ExxonMobil's Cowboy Terminal, a central delivery point located in Eddy County, New Mexico, that handles 1.2 billion cubic feet per day of natural gas processing, 600,000 barrels per day of oil processing, and 1.2 million barrels of on-site oil storage. A new phase is being started to add 600 million cubic feet of natural gas processing and 200,000 barrels per day of oil processing capacity. Multiple technologies are utilized to detect methane emissions from the company's facilities, from stationary sensors to air flights, stratospheric balloons to satellites, he said the company has eliminated all.
Hello, this is Mikey reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram. Tuesday, March 12, 2024. Federal judge blocks labor board rule that makes unionizing easier. By Alex Vega, Associated Press. A federal judge in Texas has blocked a new rule by the National Labor Relations Board that would have made it easier for millions of workers to form unions at big companies. The rule, which was due to go into effect Monday, would have set new standards for determining when two companies should be considered joint employers in labor negotiations. Under the current NLRB rule, which was passed by a Republican-dominated board in 2020, a company like McDonald's isn't considered a joint employer of most of its workers since they are directly employed by franchisees. The new rule would have expanded that definition to say companies may be considered joint employers if they have the ability to control, directly or indirectly, at least one condition of employment. Conditions include wages and benefits, hours and scheduling, the assignment of duties, work rules, and hiring. The NLRB argued a change is necessary because the current rule makes it too easy for companies to avoid their legal responsibility to bargain with workers. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce and other business groups, including the American Hotel and Lodging Association, the International Franchise Association, and the National Retail Federation, sued the NLRB in federal court in the Eastern District of Texas in November to block the rule. They argued the new rule would upend years of precedent and could make companies liable for workers they don't employ at workplaces they don't own. In his decision Friday granting the plaintiff's motion for a summary judgment, U.S. District Court Judge J. Campbell Barker concluded that the NLRB's new rule would be contrary to law and that it was arbitrary and capricious in regard to how it would change the existing rule. Barker found that by establishing an array of new conditions to be used to determine whether a company meets the standard of a joint employer, the NLRB's new rule exceeds the bounds of the common law. The NLRB is reviewing the court's decision and considering its next steps in the case, the agency said in a statement Saturday. The district court's decision to vacate the board's rule is a disappointing setback, but is not the last word of our efforts to return our joint employer standard to the common law principles that have been endorsed by other courts, said Lauren McFerrin, the NLRB's chairman. Hello, this is Mikey reading from the MRT. Entertainment. Permian Basin Comic-Con X returns to Horseshoe Arena. By BK Richer, staff writer. March 11th, 2024. The Permian Basin Comic-Con is no stranger to Midland. This year marks the ninth year of the Comic-Con returning to the Midland Horseshoe Arena on March 15th through 17th. However, this year offers guests one of the biggest face actors that the Permian Basin has seen. Film star, television actress, and producer Holly Mary Combs will be attending the Permian Basin's Comic-Con, along with other featured guests such as Dante Basco, Francois Petit, Kerry Walgren, Taryn Manning, David Matranga, Aaron Zeck, Lindsay Jones, Kara Uberle, Jill Harris, Dallas Reed, Leah Clark, Emily Neves, and Sarah Roach. Combs has graced the set of many stages, but may be best known for her popular television series, Charmed, where she portrayed the character Piper Halliwell. We are banking on the fact that people want to meet those types of guests, said founder and organizer Chris Latosh. In addition to the television, film stars, and voice actors slated to attend the event, numerous family-oriented activities are set to entertain. The Permian Comic-Con has always been more focused on family activities, Slatosh told the Reporter Telegram during a phone interview on Friday. We consider ourselves a bite-sized version of the larger cons that you see in large cities. While the typical fanfare such as a cosplay contest and workshop will be a large part of the event, there will also be an artist's alley and more than 100 exhibitors displaying items such as otaku pops, figurines, and much more. We used to be heavy with cosplay activities, said Slatosh, but now the Ector County Library has a room based on popular anime, UTPB also comes in as well and hosts robotic building sessions with our guests. Another event on the schedule for the Comic-Con includes the return of OCW Wrestling. The wrestling shows are free to watch, Slaytosh added. We also have a drone workshop this year as well. The organizers have a big net where they teach you how to manually fly a drone. Another added feature of the Permian Basin Comic-Con is that guests are allowed to bring in food and beverages. You don't have to throw them away once you enter, Slaytosh said. We will have food trucks for the event, but many times guests bring in snacks for their children during the day. As far as tips for first-time congoers, Slaytosh encouraged guests to be ready to move and be active for large amounts of time. Wear comfortable walking shoes, he explained. For younger children, he advised them to be aware of their surroundings. Kids can faint due to being overstimulated, not drinking enough water, or from their blood sugar being low due to lack of eating, he said. He advised guests to take their time and enjoy the atmosphere while still being relaxed. The Permian Basin Comic-Con X is scheduled for Friday, March 15th, until Sunday, March 17th, 2024, at the Midland Horseshoe Arena. General admission ranges from $20 to $35. VIP tickets are $125. Children under the age of 8 years old are free to attend. To view the full schedule of events and to access ticket information, please go to their website at https://pbcomiconx.com/. Hello, this is Mikey reading from the Odessa American. From local news, letter carrier robberies continue as the U.S. Postal Service, union, and lawmakers seek solutions. By Associated Press, March 12, 2024. By David Sharp. When the U.S. Postal Service launched Project Safe Delivery last year, officials pledged they would be doubling down on their efforts to combat growing rates of letter carrier robberies. The crackdown has led to hundreds of arrests and robberies slowed toward the end of the year. But overall, the number of postal carriers who were robbed in 2023 rose again, and the number who were injured nearly doubled as criminals continue to target carriers for their antiquated arrow keys that allow access to mailboxes. This week, legislation is being introduced in Congress to accelerate the replacement of tens of thousands of mailbox keys, boost prosecutions, and review sentencing guidelines. All of it can't come soon enough for letter carriers. We're like sitting ducks out there, said Houston mail carrier Tijuana Abbott, who accused postal leadership of failing to do enough to address the problem. Enough is enough. Postal carrier robberies climbed to 643 last year, an increase of nearly 30%, and the number of robberies resulting in injuries doubled to 61 last year, according to figures provided by the U.S. Postal Inspection Service in response to a Freedom of Information Act request by the Associated Press. All told, robberies grew sixfold over the past decade, and the number of postal carriers held at gunpoint increased even more, according to an analysis of the postal statistics. Under Project Safe Delivery, which was launched last May, there have been more than 1,200 arrests for mail thefts and letter carrier robberies. The Postal Inspection Service also conducted targeted law enforcement surges in trouble spots, including Chicago, San Francisco, and cities across Ohio. The effort also included the deployment of more than 10,000 high-security blue boxes in high-risk locations and the installation of nearly 30,000 electronic locks on mail receptacles. There is a glimmer of hope. Postal robberies dipped 19% over the past 5 months, while arrests for letter carrier robberies grew 73% so far in the 2024 fiscal year, said Jeff Adams, Postal Service spokesperson. We have been unrelenting in our pursuit of criminals who target postal employees and the U.S. mail. The efforts of our postal inspectors and law enforcement partners have yielded positive results, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy said. We are not done. Postal leaders and the letter carrier union were incensed when a federal judge in San Francisco last month sentenced a man who held a gun to a postal carrier's head just 30 days behind bars. DeJoy called it unacceptable. The leader of the letter carriers union called it absolutely ludicrous. Postal carriers should be able to do their job without any concern of someone putting a gun in their face or in any way assaulting them while they're just trying to do their job and deliver to the American people their mail, said U.S. Attorney Kenneth Parker, whose district in southern Ohio dealt with growing postal carrier robberies. In addition to being traumatizing for letter carriers, Parker said the robberies represent a threat to democracy because in addition to envelopes containing personal checks, prescriptions, and other important items, many now use the mail to send in ballots. This week, a bill is expected to be introduced in Congress to appropriate federal dollars to help replace the antiquated keys with electronic versions that have no value to criminals, require all 93 U.S. attorneys to designate a prosecutor for postal crime, and to review sentencing guidelines for postal crimes, said Brian Renfro, president of the National Association of Letter Carriers. The bipartisan legislation provides resources to protect our dedicated postal service workers while making sure we are punishing criminals to the fullest extent of the law, said Representative Brian Fitzpatrick, Republican of Pennsylvania, the lead sponsor in the House. Jeremiah Grant, a postal carrier in Oklahoma City, was held up in April 2022 by a man wearing a mask. He clambered to take off his thick leather belt, to which his key was attached while a gun was being pointed at him. The gunman also snatched his cell phone and smashed it. Unnerved by the experience, Grant had difficulty sleeping and decided not to go back to his route. "I'm no longer a letter carrier. I'm a clerk, because I don't feel safe going out there," Grant said. "It's not a feeling that I can shake, and it's been almost 2 years now." Abbott, the Houston mail carrier, was victim of an attempted rape in which she fought off the knife-wielding attacker on her postal route 20 years ago. 10 years later, she was robbed of her arrow key. Abbott worked through the trauma and still delivers mail, but she questions the sincerity of postal officials' efforts to stop crime. "I believe they abandoned us. We are getting robbed of the keys and they're not doing anything about it," she said. "I feel like they don't care." Though unique circumstances led to the 30-day sentence in the San Francisco case, federal law allows for a sentence of up to 10 years for an assault on a postal worker and up to 25 years for a subsequent offense, officials said. Mail theft carries a penalty of up to 5 years in prison, and possession, concealment, or disposal of property carries a sentence of up to 10 years in prison. "There used to be mindset among the public that those are federal employees," Renfro said. "If you mess with them, you're going to be in big trouble. That's what we have to make a reality again." Hello, this is Mikey reading from the Odessa American. From local news, WOVFD chief recalls Panhandle fires. Volunteers assist in largest blaze in state history. By Nathaniel Miller. March 12, 2024. Austin Hardin has never seen destruction like what he saw outside of Fritch. Burnt houses and vehicles were destroyed and scattered across the landscape. Children's bicycles became so hot their frames melted. The area he was looking at no longer resembled a Texas town. "It was just mass destruction," Hardin, chief of the West Odessa Volunteer Fire Department, said. "Their needs are so heavy there to get these Texans back and on track." As one of the 8 West Odessa Volunteer Fire Department members, Hardin and his crew responded to the Panhandle to assist in battling the Smokehouse Creek and Wendy Dew's fires, taking a command vehicle, a brush truck, the department drones, and 2 tankers. The team was joined by 5 additional members, 3 from the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department, and 2 from the Gardendale Volunteer Fire Department. The Smokehouse Creek fire started February 26 and quickly engulfed the region, becoming the largest wildfire in Texas history, burning more than 1 million acres and is currently 87% contained as of Monday. At least 2 fatalities have been attributed to the blaze. A lawsuit filed against Xcel Energy Services Incorporated and 2 other utilities claims the fire started when a wooden pole defendants failed to properly inspect, maintain, and replace splintered and snapped off at its base, according to the Associated Press. Hardin made the trip up north on February 28th after receiving contact information for volunteer fire officials in Stinnett. Volunteering, the group spent time inspecting properties to make sure they were habitable, and then making sure fires didn't flare back up after being extinguished outside of Pampa. With shoestring budgets and hand-me-down equipment, many towns in the Panhandle depend on volunteers in emergencies. With $1.9 million allocated to the West Odessa Department by the Ector County Commissioner's Court through American Rescue Plan Act funds to purchase new equipment, Ryan Kelly of the West Odessa Volunteer Fire Department said helping out is the right thing to do. It doesn't matter if you're volunteering or getting paid and working at the local, state, or federal level, he said. It's all about getting out there to protect people's lives and property. Hardin said if called to return, his team will do whatever is needed. No matter the distance, we're all Texans, he said. We feel it's our duty to help them any way we can.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.